Tomorrow marks the 100th day since President Trump took office. As of now, he signed some 30 laws and 30 executive orders, more than his most recent predecessors. Donald Trump has accomplished some of his campaign goals, including seating a conservative justice on the U.S. Supreme Court. But many of his major promises, such as building the border wall with Mexico and replacing the Affordable Care Act, linger. We wanted to know how President Trump's first 100 days stack up historically. So we're taking a look back now with Ed Ayers and Brian Ballow. They are historians and co-hosts of the weekly podcast Backstory. Ed and Brian, welcome back.
Hey, great to be here.
Thanks very much.
So the yardstick of the first 100 days goes back to Franklin Delano Roosevelt in 1933. What did he do in his first 100 days that set an informal milestone that we still use now in the Trump era?
Well, Lisa, the first thing he didn't do is say, I've only got 100 days. It's really important to think about Roosevelt coming into the presidency with this incredible economic crisis on his hands, 25% of the nation unemployed. So what he did start to do was to pass legislation with a Democratic Congress that piece by piece began to address that crisis. And it's very important to point out that in retrospect, a lot of those pieces of legislation really didn't add up ideologically. You know, some were considered progressive, social welfare, for instance. Others were very conservative. He slashed federal spending. My larger point is that he wasn't thinking, oh, I've only got 100 days.
Did he even acknowledge it? Or was it only in retrospect that people said, look what he's done in 100 days?
He acknowledged it in retrospect. Actually, in July, when the 100 days were over, he referred back to that special session of the Congress that he had called, which lasted 100 days. And he said, look at what we accomplished, and then probably doomed every other president after him to having to walk the 100-day plank.
Okay, let's look what President Trump has done. He has made a lot of the progress through these past 99 days right now through executive action. What's the significance of that now, and how does it compare historically?
Roosevelt signed some executive orders, as did all subsequent presidents in the early days of their administration. But there's no question that Trump ranks very low in terms of legislative passage among presidents who have had a majority in the Congress from their own party. You'd have to kind of go back to John F. Kennedy to find a president who had a majority of his own party who was that unsuccessful in getting legislation
through. We should say, though, that getting a conservative justice on the U.S. Supreme Court, Neil Gorsuch, is a huge accomplishment in getting it through Congress.
I don't mean to diminish the importance of that, but I think the American people have come to expect presidents to do more than that in their first 100 days, or at least in the early days of their administration.
To what extent can we tell from those first 100 days what a president's relationship with Congress will be?
Well, you know, if I may use some examples from a little bit farther back to get a longer perspective on this, and I want to talk about who is considered generally the greatest president in American history, Abraham Lincoln. And he had a terrible relationship with the whole country in his first 100 days. Matter of fact, it's hard to imagine anybody who could have had a more disastrous first 100 days than Lincoln. His were so disastrous that they began before they started counting, before he's actually inaugurated. Secession is actually beginning.
This States is the brink of the Civil War.
Exactly. And, you know, by the time he makes it to Washington for his inauguration, states have already abandoned the United States. And so, okay, it's hard to imagine much greater deficit than that. But as things proceed, other states reacting to things that he is doing also continue to secede. And so if you look at the first month of a presidency, you would say, well, Abraham Lincoln's bound to be the worst president we're ever going to have.
So what changed? I mean, was the first 100 days even relevant? Does it matter?
Yeah, I mean, people have been debating ever since then. Was there anything he could have done in those first 100 days to stem the tide? I think most historians today would say no, that it was sort of baked into it. And matter of fact, Southerners have been hoping for an opportunity to secede after the Republicans were elected. I think that, you know, over the next 4 years, he exceeded everybody's expectations about what a great president would be, partly because he was presented with greater challenge than any president, maybe until FDR was presented. So I don't think we want to hope that Donald Trump has the chance to become a great president because he's presented with terrible things happening to overcome. But that, in many ways, is the story of Abraham Lincoln.
So what happened after that? I mean, take us through, for instance, if you fast forward to the 20th century, mm-hmm. After FDR, there's Truman, there's Eisenhower, JFK, LBJ. Which presidents stand out in that group?
Well, definitely Lyndon Baines Johnson, because of what Ed said. Johnson, who, of course, rose to the presidency after Kennedy was assassinated, won re-election in his own right in 1964. And the economy was really in pretty good shape. We were in the midst of the Cold War, but we had stepped back from the brink of crises like the Berlin Wall or the Cuban Missile Crisis. Yet, Johnson passed a flurry of legislation ranging from Medicare to the Education Act and a whole bunch of other legislation that he at least felt was as impressive as Franklin D. Roosevelt. And he himself was quick to point out and say, you know, the nation wasn't even facing a crisis, and I was able to get all of this stuff through.
Again, this depends on the relationship that a president comes in with, the relationship to Congress. How do you compare what happened then, for instance, with LBJ, what the atmosphere was like, what the level of acrimony was like between the two branches with now?
LBJ had been a master, of course, of the Senate forever and knew all these people and was ready to leap into action and knew what it took to get things through Congress. Donald Trump ran against that body and sort of, you know, denigrated everybody's abilities who was on that side of Washington. So I think that it's not only party identity, but it's also the ability to manage the machinery of legislative lawmaking.
And just to build on Ed's point, Jimmy Carter was a Democratic president who had a working majority in Congress, but had very little success in Congress because, in part, he ran against the establishment and he was a little-known governor from Georgia who just didn't have the kind of experience that Ed was referring to.
So just to put a finer point on it, would you say that the first 100 days really are a harbinger of things to come?
Yes, I would. I think that what they suggest is an ability to define goals that can be accomplished. And a part of that always is understanding the time frame. How much time do we have to make these things happen? Nobody was saying these things had to be done in the first 100 days other than President Trump himself. And so I think it's a harbinger because of what it suggests is the plot line that the president lays out for his own presidency.
I'm a little less sure than Ed. To go back to Lyndon Johnson, he had perhaps the most successful first 100 days
right.
of any president who didn't face a colossal crisis. Yet his term ended in failure. And in fact, Johnson chose not to run for a re-election in 1968, the ultimate concession of defeat from Johnson himself.
In some ways, though, it was a result of decisions that he did make in the first 100 days. It plants the seeds of these later consequences that come, right? You know, about Vietnam, the undertow that pulled him under. So the first 100 days matter not only for the things that are accomplished, but for the seeds that are planted.
Thank you both for your perspectives, Ed Ayers and Brian Ballo, historians and co-hosts of the weekly podcast Backstory. Thank you, guys.
Thank you,
Lisa.